cliffcentral.com.
There's something to make you feel happy on a Tuesday morning. Just after 8 o'clock. I often think there's an opportunity here at cliffcentral.com because we can get people in, have interesting conversations, to talk to people from all over the world who play a role in South African society. And one of the relationships that we have as South Africa with one of our strongest European allies is with the Dutch. And I met very briefly the other night at a dinner. I met the Dutch ambassador, who's made time today to come in and see us. It's a pleasure to see you, ma'am. How are you?
Yes, I'm fine. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Thank you.
Looking forward.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to see you. I was saying earlier, I've got a soft spot for the Dutch. I don't know why, but I really like Dutch people. I've met so many of them, and obviously everybody's different and you can't generalize. But it just seems like you guys got the secret to living happily and making the world a better place long before everybody else in the world got it right. I don't know how that happened, but if I look at Dutch history, it seems that you managed to have a middle class before there was such a thing in Holland. It seems that the Dutch attitude to all the things that some people take terribly seriously is, if it works for you, do it. It seems like there's this very, it's a very endearing and I think quite enviable quality that Dutch people have, that they're very at peace and at ease with themselves. Do you think that's fair to say?
It's always difficult to generalize
because
we have so many different kind of Dutch people. But I think in general in the Netherlands, it's a little bit live and let live.
Right.
It's a little bit of easygoing at this moment in time, I would say.
And it has been that way for almost longer than any other European country. I mean, there are lovely things about other countries too, and we're not going to generalize with everybody. But it seems like Holland, for a very long time, the people of Holland are a lot more free in terms of things like free speech and their attitudes towards democracy and liberty and sex and, you know, religion and all that kind of thing. The Dutch just, as you say, live and let live. Mm-hmm. It's a good philosophy to go by.
It is, but there's also a lot of discussion in the Netherlands nowadays.
Sure. I mean,
there are also different opinions on free speech, on where the limits of jokes or not, and so there's also a lot of discussion in my country at this moment in time.
And obviously, like all of Europe, there are some quite divisive politics happening. I mean, we saw what happened with the French election. There was a lot of nervousness around that. Austria before that, the German elections, the British are having theirs tomorrow, I think. Mm-hmm. So there's lots to talk about in Europe at the moment. It's not as if it's a boring and sort of one-dimensional place.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And therefore, it was very good that we had such a high turnout for the elections. Mm. So there was a lot of discussion and people really felt it matters, their vote. And so they came and casted their vote. And I think what is so good is to have this open discussion and to really compare notes, compare opinions and discuss the future of our country. And that's what they did.
Now, you did do quite a lot of work before you became an ambassador, before you started working for foreign affairs. You did quite a lot of work with the European Union.
Yes.
And there's a lot of discussion around that at the moment. What's the government of Holland? What's the position on Europe right now?
Well, we are a very loyal partner of the European Union. We were one of the founding fathers. And for us, I mean, for me personally, European Union is really a peace project. It's really about peace. I mean, we came out of a devastating Second World War. And I think the European Union gave us the kind of stability and the kind of platform to build a new Europe. So for me, it's very dear to my heart, the European Union. And I think the discussion is good because the discussion also gives politicians the different opinions and they see where they have the backing of the public and where they have to perform better.
What about the relations between South Africa and Holland?
Mm-hmm. They're very strong. They're very strong relations. I mean, we're the fourth European trading partner of South Africa. There's a lot going
really,
on.
Really? Fourth biggest?
The fourth in Europe, the 10th
oh, wow.
biggest worldwide.
That's incredible.
It is incredible. It's incredible. There's a lot going on.
When we talk about Holland, you guys punch above your weight. I mean, you know, it's a small country. It's not the biggest population in Europe either, but there seems to be a huge amount of industry and trade and technological advancement and innovation that goes on in yeah, Holland.
Absolutely, that's what makes us tick. I mean, yeah, trade is in our DNA, and so there's a lot going on between our two countries, business to business, government to government as well, but also universities. There's a lot of cooperation going on between the universities as well, and even in the cultural sector, there's a lot of companies that work together, co-productions being made, Netherlands taking part in the festivals here in your country. So it's a very vivid relationship, and you can also see it in tourism. Yes. We had 150,000 tourists last year. So a lot going on between our two countries.
I remember during the World Cup, Mubs, do you remember all the Dutch football fans that came here in 2010?
Yeah, it was, like was the most, so much fun.
They were the most solid supporters, and you could identify them from a mile away.
In Everybody their orange.
Else, yeah, in their orange and their songs, and they were basically, it's like a cavalcade that went through South Africa.
That was when we first learned Hup Holland.
Yeah.
Hup
Holland.
No, don't make me jealous now, because
when were you posted? When did
you
start? I wasn't
here. I was in the Netherlands, and I know that our ambassador at that time, that he had really a great time. It's the best ever, I think, to have the world championship in the country where you're posted, and then even getting it, you know, taking it into the finals as
Absolutely.
Well. That was really wonderful. But I think also South Africa has been such a wonderful host in 2010. People were so outgoing, were so welcoming. It was so safe as well in these weeks when the World Championship yeah. was taking place.
No, it was a very special time. But it did make me think that, again, there's something special about the Dutch and the way that they kind of, they gather together and they have a whole lot of fun, which some people are incapable of having. And, you know, sometimes I think about what those things are that bring us together as South Africans. Mm-hmm. And I'm sometimes a little bit jealous about the way that the Dutch just coalesce around things, even if there are, you know, it's diversities within the society. Mm. Yeah.
But the championship, I think, was an example of the South Africans coming together
yeah.
or not.
No,
I wasn't
sure.
here,
no,
but that's
no,
what
sure.
I've been told. That people were really celebrating and were really showing, you know, all the good your country had to offer to the world.
So how does it work in Holland? You've got, it's a democratic country, obviously, and you elect the government, and you've also got a king.
Yes, we do. Head of state is our king.
And your queen abdicated a while ago, and she's still alive, but she gave
is,
the throne
absolutely.
To her son.
Very much, yeah. very much so, and she's still very active as well. But so her son took over, and yes.
We're Wilhelm, right?
Willem-Alexander.
Yeah, right. Which
Willem-Alexander,
is
the
wasn't the founder of the Dutch Republic back all those years ago, Willem of Orange?
Yes, he was. He was a very important figure during the time of the Republic.
Like late 1600s, early 1700s.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Yes, when we had the 80-year war against the Spanish. And that's also when the Dutch started sailing the seas. That was around the same time.
And the Dutch History. Used to belong to the Spanish Empire. Holland
right.
used to be
a part
yeah.
of.
Yeah. And a lot of people, I suppose, don't realize that that was only 300 years ago or something.
It's not so long ago.
No, it's not in European historical yeah. terms. It's really not.
No, it's not such a long time ago. And I think the interesting thing is that when all the countries in Europe were monarchies, we were a republic.
Right.
And where all the lots of monarchies turned into republics, we turned into a monarchy. So we always want to be the odd one out, it seems.
So what is the... What is the relationship then between sort of the fact that you have a monarch and the fact that you have a constitutional democracy? I mean, how does that work? Because for a lot of people, it's confusing.
Is it?
Well,
yeah.
just that you can have both. It's uh-huh. sort of like the English have both and the Danish right. have both
yes.
and the Swedish have both. But we're yeah. not exactly sure how it works. So what does the king do?
Well, the king is a very important figure of unity of our country. So what he does is to represent our country abroad. Mm. So he travels a lot. He pays state visits. He also travels with business as well. He leads trade delegations as well abroad. And he receives a lot of guests. He's also a very important figure, I think, in our country when terrible things happen. Mm. He's a very important person who unites the country. And our government has been elected every 4 years, and so it can change every 4 years. We have a prime minister, and we always have coalition governments. So the king is there as a figure of stability as well, I think, because at this moment in time, where we are in the process of forming a new government, so the king is there. It's a kind of stability.
keeps the everything regular. And
yes,
and,
it works well, I think. It works well.
Who do you report directly to? I mean, you're obviously posted here in the name of the king.
Right.
But you report to government, right?
Yes, I report to government. I report to government and to the king. I mean, of course. I mean, he will also read all our cables if he wants. And he's part of government.
Isn't it an interesting system, Sia?
Yeah.
Huh? It's kind of it's slightly eccentric and a little bit more, I suppose, colorful and interesting than just having elected officials.
But
that would be boring.
It's a tradition, and I mean, and there are more countries in Europe who have this system. So and also, I mean, on your continent, I'm also accredited to Namibia, Botswana, but also to the two kingdoms, to Lesotho and Swaziland. So I also paid a visit to the two kings to present my credentials in Lesotho and Swaziland.
Okay.
So these are also there's also a royal family, royal family there.
What about the business relationship between South Africa and the Netherlands?
Yeah.
I mean, there must be quite a lot of trade that happens.
Yeah, there's a lot of trade going on.
That we don't even know about. There are interesting arrangements and agreements and kind of certain businesses want to get involved in South Africa and certain South African businesses want to get involved in the Netherlands. How does it all work?
Yeah, it works really well because, you know, we're comparable in the sense of that we're kind of a gateway to the continent. That's how we see ourselves with the port of Rotterdam and with the airport in Amsterdam. And also South Africa is also a gateway to the continent of Africa. So a lot of things are comparable with the big ports. There's a lot of cooperation between the ports, but also lots of big multinational companies like you all know them, like Shell and Heineken and Unilever, Vopak. They all have Dutch roots. And they also use South Africa as a kind of a springboard to the continent. So they have their head offices here. But there are also lots of SMEs, small and medium enterprises, who are intrigued by South Africa and who are trying their luck here. So we have about 350 Dutch companies being active here, creating 100,000 jobs in South Africa. So there's a lot going on. We at the embassy, we focus on six sectors that we think are really interesting. So it's in the energy, in the logistics, in the water area, of course, agriculture and horticulture is very important as well. And what we try to do, and I really like that, because we call it modern diplomacy. What we try to do together with big business and together with consultants with Dutch roots and the universities, we tried to invest in your entrepreneurs, in entrepreneurship here in South Africa. We also tried to use this strong bond that we have between the two countries, both in the educational field as well as in the business field, to do something meaningful. And that's what we're doing right now. We call it the Orange Corners. We have three in Johannesburg, and we're training entrepreneurs right there.
And obviously, there's a lot of expertise that you can draw on because, as you say, there's so many Dutch companies that are currently involved in South Africa, but there are also lots of new ideas coming out of Holland.
Yes.
So you can expose people to that. You can help them perhaps get more training and academic qualifications overseas. You can help them get their businesses started.
Yes, because that's what I like so much about being an ambassador, is that you are in all these different networks. And what you can do easily is connect these networks and look for the added value. And I think for these entrepreneurs, these big business, they can also provide not only the business support, but also mentorship, networks, connection. That's what's very often, that's what really counts.
What did you think when you first arrived in South Africa? Was it your first time here when you came as ambassador?
I tell you a story. I'd spent only 10 hours in your country before I became an ambassador here. Because it was back in 1995 when I went with the minister to Namibia. And I was flying back on my own via Johannesburg to Amsterdam. And I'd never been in your country before.
So what, did you just sit in the airport? What a horrible way to be introduced
to
us.
That's a good question. Because I tried to call some colleagues at the embassy. And they said, sorry, we don't have time. We didn't know you were coming. Stay at the airport. Very dangerous in Johannesburg.
Oh, no.
And after 1 hour, I thought, I'm not going to do that. So I went outside and I chatted a little bit with the taxi drivers. And there was this young black taxi driver who just started his own business. And I made a prize for the day. And I said, show me your country. Tell me your stories.
Wow.
So I sat in the front seat and I chatted with him. And he took me around. He showed me Soweto. We had coffee with his mom. He took me to the Carlton to have a look over the city. He made me buy the Long Walk to Freedom from Nelson Mandela. I said, you really have to read this book.
Yes.
And so I spent like from 10 o'clock in the morning till, yeah, let's say till 6 o'clock in the evening. So what's that? That's like 8 hours I spent in your country. And I was reading the book on my way back to Amsterdam, and I have been intrigued by your country ever since. And if this taxi driver recognized me now, and if he's listening, he should really get in touch with you, because I would love to talk to him again.
You see, I love that you wanted to know enough that you just found some guy, and he was also willing enough to take you to his own parents' house.
Yeah, he did.
And to show you all the things he thought were interesting about Johannesburg.
And he was telling me about New South Africa, because it was like 95, so South Africa came from a very complex, very difficult time, the negotiations that took place, and he was telling me his part of that story and what happened in his life. And so it was a very interesting encounter. So I spent only 10 hours in your country before I became ambassador, but living there now for 3 years.
I know a lot of people are interested in what it means to be an ambassador. I mean, Mabali and I talk about this sometimes. In some ways, it's a terrific job, but in other ways, it can be quite pressurized and difficult. What are the nicest parts of being an ambassador? You mentioned those networks. I mean, being able to connect people up and being able to meet with the most interesting people in the country and make things happen for them. That must be a major plus.
I think that's the best. You know, you can really combine the networks. You can be really the ambassador at one moment in time, meeting the politicians, the high level in society. But you can also really go into other networks. You know, I've been to the Cape Flats. Mm. I've been there together with someone who works with the gangs in the Cape Flats. And I said to him, better not introduce me as an ambassador, but as your friend. I mean, introduce me. Show me what's happening in your country. And so you can really vary a little bit with these roles. And by having all these networks, at a certain moment, you see opportunities and you can make connections. Let me give you one example. Mm-hmm. What we did, for example, with your Minister Zulu, we signed an MOU on cooperatives, because cooperatives is something really big in the Netherlands, and they're really old. I think most people don't even know anymore that these are cooperatives. And your country is also working with cooperative, trying to see how you can connect. So what we're doing right now in Limpopo is that we tried to build a pilot, a model cooperative, together with a commercial farmer, ZZ2, the Van Zels.
Right, they've got the tomato farms.
They got the tomato and the avocado farms, and together with 15 emerging farmers, we built a cooperative, and we give them training as well. We give them support. We even have having a journalist and a PhD student following to see how it's going and what are the do's and the don'ts to build a really successful cooperative.
And these cooperatives obviously are these are the businesses that run as stores, as suppliers in rural areas, and you can't live without them.
Yeah, you need them, but you also need to do something about distributing the land and make sure that you make the land productive and that the emerging farmers can really produce and that it's sustainable and that they can go to the market. So by combining the emerging farmers with the commercial farmers and combining, for example, logistics, management, these kind of issues, you can make it really work. And so I find that really exciting. And we connected the universities from the Netherlands and from South Africa to help the farmers as well and to see how we can make a difference. And so these things are really exciting.
We've also got a long history with Holland in South Africa. I mean, this used to be a Dutch colony once, and there are a lot of descendants of Dutch settlers here in South Africa. There's Afrikaans, which is a derivative in some ways of the Dutch language. I mean, do you feel that there's some kind of warmth there, especially because historically there's a connection?
Well, for me as a Dutch ambassador, it's very interesting to be in this country because nobody is indifferent towards the Netherlands. And because of this history, some people feel this strong bond, but also people are upset about this history. Mm. And what I try to do is to meet everybody and be in touch with everybody and share stories and be open for what people have to tell me. So I meet people with this strong historic bond who have last names that are still Dutch, who speak a language that I can understand. But I also meet people who are upset about that history, and I talk to them. And then again, I also meet people because the Netherlands had a very strong anti-apartheid movement. And so I also meet lots of people from another part of your society who have a strong bond because they were in exile in Amsterdam, right. For example, or they studied there in the 80s, or we had two very big conferences in the 80s on culture and on women. And so I keep on meeting people who have this bond or who have an opinion about the Netherlands, and that makes it so very, very interesting, I think.
Yeah, better that than apathy.
I think so, or indifference, or not knowing at all who you are. So it's always exciting.
What about the fact that the Netherlands themselves, you guys are dealing, as with many countries in Europe, with huge problems around people's attitudes towards immigration, towards the immigrants themselves, and how they manage to fit in with society there. And it's becoming, you know, in South Africa, we deal with diversity every single day. And for a lot of European countries, they're having to deal with some of the tougher parts of that now, because there are people coming from all over the world to be in Europe. In some ways, it's experiencing a kind of a diversity renaissance like it hasn't for a long time. But this comes with challenges. And there are obviously people in Holland and in other countries who are very anti this kind of thing, this immigration. They see it as a dilution of Dutch culture. How do you feel about all of that?
I think migration is part of our lives, for, you know, all through history. You were talking about the Netherlands of 1600-1700. We had lots of migrants at that moment in time as well. So people have been moving as long as we know, I think, and it's something that's part of our lives, and we have to find a way of making it work. And of also, you know, really appreciating the richness of it as well, without hiding the problems. And I think the big cities in Amsterdam, they're very multicultural. So is our society. So is our diplomatic service, for example. So it should be really a mirror, I think, of society, all that we do.
Are you having fun here? I mean, being posted? Are you enjoying... this is an interesting
very
country.
Much so.
I mean, so much to see, right? And there are lots of really interesting people to meet around South Africa.
No, absolutely.
We also have this very cosmopolitan and multicultural, particularly places like Johannesburg and Durban and Cape Town.
No, absolutely. It's such a multicultural society. And you know, every month I think I have this special ceremony for South Africans who could trace back their Dutch heritage and who do get a Dutch passport. And it's always a very interesting talk because, I mean, their heritage also resembles a little bit of the heritage of people in the Netherlands, like people who came from Turkey or from Morocco. They also came as migrants in the 50s, and they also have their children and grandchildren who are now living in the Netherlands. And so with them having a Dutch passport and being able to travel to the Netherlands up and down again, I think it also gives a good connection, because I always tell them, I said, you can make us understand better what it's like for migrants to live in the Netherlands, who also want to keep partly their own identity as well as adopting the new identity. You know, as they are feeling their Dutch heritage, but they're very much South Africans as well. It's the same a bit, I think, for the groups in the Netherlands. So I think the more we connect and we travel and we talk with one another, the easier it is also to live together.
Well, look, either you're going to find reasons to get along or you're going to find reasons to fight with each other. And I just don't see any benefit to the latter. You've got to go with the former on this one. Mm-hmm. Right, Sia?
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
What do you know about Holland, Sia? Come on, let's test your knowledge here.
This is so bad. What do I know about... I took history. I know about the Dutch settlers in South Africa.
Okay. What do you know about the country?
Who wears the clogs?
Yeah, they don't...
Do they wear clogs?
The ambassador's not wearing clogs now.
But long time ago, the farmers did.
Yeah, exactly. I know the clogs.
You know the windmills.
The windmills.
And the dikes. And the... And
the who?
No. No. It's a very...
Did I just put class to
It's a low-lying country. So
yes.
You have to build these mechanisms, these dikes that keep the water from the sea out of the land so that you can use the land and
like
make it arable. It's kind of like a dam wall, I suppose.
Yeah, because one-third of the country is below sea level. So we have to make sure to protect the land against the sea, and also to pump out the water on a daily basis. That's how the whole story with the windmill started, to pump out the water.
and
So that's also something that is really an interesting connection between our two countries, the water.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. And because also South Africa is thinking of innovations to solve water problems.
Well, especially
and
in the Western Cape. They've
Western Cape at this moment in time, but also in this side of the country. I mean, not so long ago, there was also a water shortage. And And so it's interesting. We have a very strong bond. We have an MOU on water and we work together. Because although we have too much water in the Netherlands and you have not enough, governance, innovations, it works for both problems. So there's a lot going on.
Someone on Twitter was actually asking about your water management skills.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's because of the abundance of water there, but also it's just supply and demand, right? You want to get it to where it's needed and take it away from where it's not.
There's a lot going on. We have one expert now working with your ministry on the National Water Plan, for example. We have our local water authorities also working together with your local water authorities. What we do now with SALGA, we have a center of expertise where we showcase the innovation that the Netherlands has to see how and where it can help South Africa. But we also do it very much on a win-win basis, because when we work together, we also take something out of it, because we also learn from South Africa, you know, the way you're solving your problems. So we call that co-create as A. We have this slogan, co-create as A, because we really think that it only works well to work together if there's a win-win. And so that's also how we started our Orange Corner. Work together with the two parties, invest in entrepreneurship here in South Africa, but also see how we connect our incubators at our universities with our young entrepreneurs, with your entrepreneurs, and give it a kind of a landing platform.
Sounds
as well.
Like you're doing a lot.
Well, it's so much
sounds
fun.
Sounds like you're very
I
busy.
Tell you, I would love to tell you more, because, you know, the more I'm here in your country, the more people I meet, the more opportunities you see. And I also have such a great team, you know.
I'm sure.
I call them the dream team, my A team. They're so good. I mean, there's so much energy and creativity in them. We also have a consulate general in Cape Town. So we also have a team over there. And it's, we're very enthusiastic.
How many people do you meet in South Africa who can speak Dutch?
Well,
are you surprised?
The Afrikaans, it's not Dutch, but we can kind of understand each
other.
You
can understand them, but they don't always... I've heard Dutch people say that Afrikaans is almost like children speaking Dutch.
No. I don't agree with that.
I had a Dutch friend.
I don't agree with that.
Come on. One of my Dutch friends said to me, it sounds like when kids are about 4 or 5 and they're learning to speak Dutch.
No, I don't agree. I think it's really a separate language, but the interesting thing is that you can kind of follow.
Yeah.
You know, I read the newspapers. I'm kind of intrigued by it. I don't dare to speak, to be quite honest, because it's so close.
Is the spelling also similar?
No, it's different. No, it's different. Sometimes you have to speak out loud the words in order to understand what it is. But I'll give you something Dutch to read, and you can see the differences.
I don't think you'd be able
But speaking Dutch, I mean, there's some universities who still have a faculty and where there are Dutch students.
Yes.
Yeah,
in Pretoria, I think.
Yeah.
They've got one.
And
we had a professor in law who actually was Hollands. He used to come in and speak Hollands to us, and we wouldn't understand what the hell he was saying. And then he'd say, I'd say to him, Professor, ik begrip geen bol van. And he wouldn't know what the hell I...
that's very Dutch. Ik begrip geen bol van.
Well, I had to steal that from someone who actually spoke it.
Oh, that just sounds very good to me.
Yeah. No, it's a lovely language. Now, we have a lot of South Africans who live in or are working in Holland. Do you think that that's something that people might want to consider doing in South Africa if they've just finished at university or they've just left school and they want to do some international experience? Is it easy to get a job in Holland or to go over there and travel a little bit?
Well, I think traveling is always possible. It's always possible to go as a tourist to Europe and to travel. And I would really advise them, go to the Netherlands, but also go to other places because it's so easy. It's so small. I mean... So I would really advise them to do that. Also, studying is interesting. I mean, there's a very good European program of exchange for university students. It's called Erasmus Mundus. I think they can just Google it. But there's also a Grant Finder. I think you can Google Grant Finder to see what kind of university or bursaries there are for students to go and study in the Netherlands. So for your listeners, please check.
That's terrific. Listen, I'm so happy to meet you and for you to spend some time with us this morning.
Thank you so much.
I know it sounds to me like you're the busiest embassy in South Africa, so you've obviously got a lot on your plate, but we're delighted to have spent some time with you today.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
Just a last question. Someone else on Twitter would like to know. She says, lovely listening to the ambassador. Have rules changed as my husband's parents were born in Holland and couldn't get a passport?
Yes, I think what she can best do is really connect with us, because there are some rules. I mean, if let me not go into that into detail right now, but it's not as simple that just if your parents were Dutch that you can get a Dutch passport. It also depends on if they were still Dutch when this person was really was born, or if they already had given up on their Dutch passport by adopting another passport, a South African, for example. So there are some rules and regulations. So it's best, I think, that she connects with the embassy. It's PRE, I think, PRE, at Minbusa, MINBUZA.nl.
Oh, Minbusa. Just for
Minbusa, Ministry of Foreign Affairs.
That just sounds classy coming from Minbusa? The ambassador. Yes.
Yeah, sounds classy. Okay, thank you.
It's a pleasure to have you here, and thank you so much for coming to see us today.
Thank you so much.
The ambassador to the from the Netherlands to South Africa, Ms. Marisa Gerards. Did I say that right?
Yes.
Gerards, there we go. Very good. I was worried about that. Sometimes you get pronunciation wrong and someone looks at you funny. It's lovely to see you. Thank you. Very, very cool. So if you've heard it, you've been invited to Holland, go and visit. And make sure if you are interested in all of this that you connect with the Dutch embassy here in South Africa. Sounds like they're doing work that might be useful to you, particularly if you're an entrepreneur or if you're someone who's interested in Holland. That's what they're here for. And they want to connect with you. Very, very cool. Yeah, it's Kygo, Selena Gomez, and a little bit of Tiesto all thrown into one, and it ain't me on a Tuesday morning. You know, Gord Laws is here visiting us. He's just moved up from Cape Town because he needed to find a shower. How are you, dude?
Moved back. Moved back from Cape Town.
I know you've always been a Joburg boy.
Let's make it very clear. I have the 011 tattoo on my wrist. I was just visiting Cape Town.
How many tattoos you got right now?
It depends how you quantify tattoos, GC. Dude, it's like
you got a sleeve?
If the whole arm, is it one or is it 31?
You're looking you're looking like the most tattooed guy in SA.
Yeah.
No, I don't know about that.
Are you going to go for the face?
No, that's dude, the only reason is that I don't think it looks good.
Yeah.
Like, not out of any kind of fear of recrimination. I've already got the dual job stoppers.
Right, the fists.
Yeah, you got to do the hands. Because I think, you know, I'm a tattoo guy. What can I say?
Nice, I though. Feel like the best way to ask this question is, which parts of your body are not tattooed?
I have my full right arm and hand all the way up to where my neck begins, my collarbone.
Yeah.
The left is from the collarbone down to the elbow, and I'm working my way up on the other side. My left leg is probably about 90% covered, and I'm working on the right leg. I'm also having a big one removed there, largely because it's in the way of a more ambitious project.
Well, you only got so much canvas.
Well, my level of canvas fluctuates, as you well know, GC. Right now, I'm open to get a life-size portrait of myself on myself. But yeah, I'm home, and I'm super glad to be home. And obviously, one of the first things I did was reach out to you and say, dude, I'm home. So here I am.
We thought you'd come and hang with us, and Gord will be spending a couple of days with us here.
What a pleasure.
Yeah, sure, dude.
Some of my multiple personalities, I would imagine, as well. But it's just killer to be here, and it's super rad to be able to hang out with you guys on the show. So thanks for having me.
I saw the funniest update from you the other day on Facebook. You said you went to see a movie. And it was so cuck and so lame. You said it was the gayest thing you've ever seen since you walked in on three of your gay friends having sex with Will and Grace playing in the background.
Yeah, I don't remember what it was.
What was it? Do you remember what
the
movie was?
I don't think it was a movie. I can't remember what it was.
Something
that was
maybe
so
a TV
unbelievably
show,
gay.
I don't know.
I say gay with the greatest endearment.
No. But, you know, you get two kinds of, yeah.
But yeah, I don't remember what it was. But whatever it was, that is probably the utmost level of gay.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a pretty good way of describing things, though, with Will and Grace in the background.
For the record, I have actually walked in on gay friends getting intimate while Will and Grace was playing in the background, and I was like, Jesus, you guys are stereotypes. I had my one gay homie who I obviously won't name, and he was looking after my place while I was
one
away.
One gay homie or homo? Sorry,
I see what you did there.
I always say that it's bad.
Yeah, my one mate who happens to be gay was looking after my place, and while he was staying there and visiting, and I was out, and I came back in, and he was cuddling on the couch with one. He was entertaining a gentleman caller, and he was cuddling on the couch, and they were watching Will and Grace off a hard drive, and I was like, geez, guys, like, seriously, all you need to do is adopt a toy Pomeranian, perhaps go to a Broadway show, and you're the ultimate stereotype.
Well, I'm glad you moved back up to Joburg.
Me too,
there's
man.
More going on over here. I mean, Cape Town's lovely. They don't have to compete with each other. They both have their charms.
As you know, because we met when I was interviewing you at Turtle Creek during my days at FHM, back when magazines were a thing.
That's when we met.
Yeah, it was the first time we met. And then I've been on your show on other stations, and we did that jawl at Plate Rage.
Yes, that was
which,
quite fun.
Which, thank God, that was before the days of things being documented online, because our reputations would have been shot otherwise.
But you're also an interesting dude. You've got a massive thing for metal.
I do have a thing for metal. I perform as a drum and bass and hip hop MC, so I do that as well.
I was going to get to that. You don't have to toot your own horn here.
I wasn't. I'm just differentiating myself as being more culturally diverse than just metal.
Sure. But it is something, it's interesting, because a lot of people don't necessarily understand that.
Yep.
And metalheads mean business when they talk about music. They take it very seriously. They've got certain bands they love, certain bands they can't stand.
It's a divided church.
Yeah.
So to speak. And, you know, I read somewhere recently, and it kind of struck me as like, you know, an insight that was blindingly true the moment I saw it, which is that people apparently at age 31 in general stop being interested in new music they don't know and become very committed to the music they already do know. Now, I, as a person who's always, I mean, you know, back in the day of 14.4 kilobyte modems downloading an MP3 for 4 hours on your telecom line that actually ended up costing you more than the CD, which wasn't available, et cetera, et cetera.
Correct.
I would like just thrive on any kind of new music, any new band, even if I was just listening to them in depth to kind of ascertain how much I hate them, I would listen. And now it's like I can't be asked. My younger friends have all got bands. Like, check this band out. I listen for 30 seconds. I'm like, nope. There's a new Metallica out. There's a new Killswitch Engage out. There's a new Slipknot out. There's a new Hatebreed out. I'm busy. I don't know. Need
Hatebreed
to know about this. Dude, I've got 3 Hatebreed tattoos. In fact, I'm signed by the singer of Hatebreed, Jamie Joster, on my Hatebreed tattoo. They're the most positive band that you get. It's like Dr. Phil minus the weird creepy vibe over metal.
Nice.
Like self-help metal. Yeah.
I never thought I'd hear that.
No.
I swear to God,
a lot of metal
is extremely positive. Bands like Killswitch Engage, also with a name that's just not doing anything to illustrate my point.
But you have to have a hardcore name.
Yeah, obviously.
You call yourself the fairy unicorn rainbows.
Yeah, although some guys do the ironic thing, like bringing a shark to a gunfight. There's a band, I don't know if it's quite metal, but they're on the heavier spectrum, called Dance Gavin Dance. Zombies Ate My Girlfriend are quite a well-known South African metal band. So, yeah, I mean,
it's funny you say this, though, about new music. I like new music. I like finding out about what's going on out. I mean, this morning, for example, I don't think I played an old song.
I think it's a coping mechanism for you, though, GC. I think you had
no
choice. Well, you were caged up in that other room where you had no choice but to listen to the most current pop music, which is like saying you had to read the most current governmental press release. So you were like at your previous station, and they would play whatever was brand new and whatever was playlisted.
But
I would kill myself or adapt.
I did like a lot of it. I've got to tell you, I've got a very wide-ranging musical taste.
Because I remember I asked you once, you told me that you preferred the Rolling Stones to the Beatles and that you liked that stuff. And I know you like a bit of old school rock. I think it was AC/DC that you said you were fully
still
into.
Still love it.
And when I've jawled a couple of parties with you, which we've done on a couple of occasions, the Plate Rage one being one in a case in point, and a couple of FHM events back in the day.
Yes.
You play old school hip hop, which is why I pledged my eternal love for you, because you busted some House of Pain and some Dre, and I was like, there we are.
But the old school hip hop is just so superior to a lot of the stuff that's coming out now. But having said that, when I look at someone like Kendrick Lamar, don't tell me he isn't as good and he isn't as talented and he isn't doing as much amazing stuff as Dre used to do back in the old days, or Notorious B.I.G.
I would even venture to say that Kendrick is more lyrically gifted than someone like Dre, for sure. What set Dre apart was the groundbreaking approach to production and content and signing new artists. So in terms of the thing is, dope lyrical MCs these days are rare. They're the exception to the rule. And it's the audience that have created a market for shitty MCs. Like, I mean, I recently had the misfortune of discovering Little Yachty. Little Yachty. As in yacht? Oh, Y-A-C-H-T-U-I. And he's not even taking himself seriously. And yet, like, millions of people, got a video called...
Give me a rating out of 10 for this song. Okay, I'm going to give you two songs here and you give me
Don't play Little Yachty, dude. No. People will drive their car.
What do you think of that? Come on.
Dude, you can't deny the sincerity. That man wants to bone.
Badly.
Like, and therein lies the redeeming quality of that particular tune. That guy believes in what he's about to do.
Yep. How about this? This is some good rap. Are you ready?
Well, I wrote this song for the Christian youth. I want to teach kids the Christian truth. If you want to reach those kids on the street, then you got to do a rap to a hip-hop beat. So I gave my sermon an urban kick. My rhymes are fly, my beats are sick. My crew is big and it keeps getting bigger. That's because Jesus Christ is my nigga.
That's nice, right?
Yeah, well, you know, each different strokes for different folks. I'd say that dude's probably
down with the people.
He's more lyrical than any of these mumble rappers these days. They are dope MCs, dude. And most of them are in the battle.
Pussy good, pussy sweet. Pussy good, pussy sweet. Pussy good, pussy sweet. Pussy good, pussy sweet. Pussy good, pussy sweet.
Now that's good, right? That's very powerful.
Again, it's a empowered young lady. She's proud of her pussy. She wants to celebrate it in song.
You know? I would.
So don't give me that crap that rap is dying and that hip-hop is in decline.
Dude, I mean, you get guys like, back in the day, Big Pun would drop a rhyme like, dead in the middle of little Italy, little did we know that we riddled the middle men who didn't do diddly, and that was like one bar.
Nice.
Okay, look at you now.
You don't get that level of rhyme in an entire mumble rap song.
No, you don't.
But you must check it out. If anybody's online and they're looking to check some stuff out, there's a 16-year-old dude called Token, white guy.
Yeah.
Ridiculous. Ridiculous. No, but he's ridiculous. Like, his lyrical abilities are ridiculous. On the topic of Christian rap, there's a dude called NF. Those are his initials. I don't know what it stands for. And he's dropping some really good stuff, and it's not terribly preachy. And then there's a young guy now, 19 years old, called Afro. All Flows Reach Out. And he won a competition by Ore the Rugged Man to get... He put out an a cappella version of one of his famous songs, and everyone was invited to submit their own version of it, and Afro won it. He was 17 at the time, and he absolutely murders. So yeah, this, and you know, then there's still a lot of old school guys putting out cool stuff like Jedi Mind Tricks. I could talk for long.
No, I know you're into this stuff, and it's real with you. It's like, this is what you spend your time doing. I love it.
Mm. I like a bit of a battle myself here and there.
You're still doing some of that performance stuff?
Yeah, I play on drum and bass. The scene fluctuates in size on a sort of a 2 or 3 year cycle. It virtually disappears, becomes very underground. New generation of kids pick it up. It gets very big. The parties get to thousands of people. Then it's sort of some other EDM thing will... But it's been going for long enough that cycle seems to be perpetual. So I played a show 2 weeks ago with my homie DJ Ambush. There were about 40 people there.
Yeah.
But yussy, they were throwing down. And then, you know, you hope in a year or two, things seem to be picking up that we'll be playing like big festivals with some international artists again.
Awesome.
I just do it because I dig it.
Well, I'm glad you're here to hang with us for a little while. And
Thank
I'm glad
you.
You're back in Joburg too. All right, Sia, you had some story about how, this is something that fascinates me. We talk about it all the time, how you can go on a digital detox and some people go offline and they decide they're not going to be on social media. I've tried this and failed.
Yeah.
I'm not going to try again.
Well,
because I don't see, to me, it's not like there's a line. It blurs into real life. A lot of your very close friends are also the people you interact with most on social media. And a lot of the people you don't know at all are the ones who can get to see what you're all about and what you're doing thanks to social media. So you just got to embrace it and move on. It isn't a separate part of your existence. When someone's on their phone and they're having a WhatsApp conversation with somebody who isn't in the room, that doesn't mean they hate you because you are in the room and they're not talking to you at that moment. Get over yourself.
Preach. Exactly.
But apparently there's very bad side effects to people who do try to get offline.
Well, this survey actually shows that we should stop being so hard on ourselves about trying to be off social media and trying to do all these social media detox, etc., etc. So a Milan University in Italy, of course, and Swansea University in Wales did this survey with 144 participants aged 18 to 33. Mm-hmm. And basically, they kept on just monitoring them after they tried to quit an internet session, tried to stay away. And this is what they were basically able to sum up and find out. So with these participants spending an average of about 5 hours a day on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
And when you think about it, that's
a lot of time. But then
when you say on, do you mean like with your face buried in your screen and looking at nothing else, or checking your phone every 10 minutes?
I think it is cumulatively 5 hours altogether. And when you think about it, probably we spend as much.
I reckon most people do.
In our 24 hours?
I've walked into rooms where people are supposed to be hanging together and all of them are on their phones.
Exactly. Or they even have their phones in their hands. That's the
whole
thing.
Time, dude.
Even just sitting at dinner waiting for your food.
What are we going to do? You're going to try and change behavior here? So yeah, what is the effect?
Yeah, so with 20% more of these participants spending over 6 hours a day on the internet. Now, with staying away from social media, what was actually noticed was a heart rate and blood pressure that was increasing, which shows very similar traits to with people who are addicted to drugs, such as alcohol or cannabis or heroin, having basic withdrawal symptoms.
So it's like going cold turkey.
We're basically addicted.
Yeah.
And in this context, I don't actually think it's a bad thing. And we should stop being...
You know why we're addicted, right? You get those dopamine hits from the likes. Someone sent me this really disturbing picture yesterday. I'll post it a little bit later on of what it looks like. I mean, it's an artistic rendering of kind of someone sitting in front of a screen and they're vomiting up likes.
Yep.
They're actually vomiting up the little thumbs up symbols.
So what the survey actually proves is, if you do view yourself as an addict, and I'm not being Dr. Phil here, but if you really view yourself in that way and you're trying to stay away from what you are addicted to, this is why you're so on edge all the time and you'll want to go back onto the internet and you feel bad about it. So chillax, relax, like just carry on liking and Snapchatting. It's fine.
Yeah,
it's just part of your lives. Exactly. It's a new normal.
I don't get it.
See, you're
yeah, but you don't even know how. Your phone's not even on. Give me that thing.
Where is your phone, right? Ah, she has it.
Wow. It's not even on. Hello?
Is that like the test phone you see in the store?
Is there anyone in there?
The with the sticker of the screen on the screen.
And it's like, change this thing.
I wondered why you never replied to WhatsApp. She doesn't even switch her phone on.
Here's a thought, though, like in terms of people using social media, right? Social media, if you were a very social person back in the day and used to always hang out with your friends and you had that little phone book which was alphabetical on the side and you knew everybody's number and you would sit on the phone for 2 hours and your mom would shout at you, and you're kind of one of those want to be in touch with your friend all the time type of people, then social media is kind of a conduit to continue doing the same thing.
Sure.
You see what your mates are up to, chat to them, laugh at their joke and say, oh no, I'm so sorry your cat died. But social media allows you to be actively antisocial. So previously, if you were a curmudgeonly dick that hated everyone, you sat and did it in your house by yourself, or maybe occasionally yelled at somebody in traffic who then laughed at you and didn't care at all that you were ruining your own day. Now, you can, that like that guy.
Now you control.
Now you control and fight and go and disagree with things and sit in your phone and hate people.
Absolutely.
Which is why I don't understand why people's blood pressure were elevated. In my mind, that to me sounds like a de-stressing mechanism. If you don't have your phone on you, you don't have access to your laptop, then you can't get outraged by something on Twitter, or you don't end up in Twitter fights, you know?
But
like, that to me sounds like the opposite effect of increased blood pressure. It sounds to me like de-stress.
The key is the fact that you don't have the exposure.
Let's get it.
This song is great. With these dumb trolls, they're fucking deep.
bang.
Oh, asshole.
I hate these dumb trolls, bunch of stupid cunt.
Fuck off, troll.
I hate these dumb trolls, why don't you blur me?
You're a goddamn troll.
Fuck those fucking assholes, fuck those fucking fuckers.
But dude, this has to be a parody.
You're like, just another goddamn troll.
I hate
troll.
Your dumb trolls.
You're just another troll asshole.
Shut my dick, dumb troll.
All right, there's the trolls.
Yeah, so
I'm with my buddy. I mean, I and Gord makes a good point. I mean, you don't have to be actively antisocial. If you don't like it, you don't like it. Don't go drag everyone else down. And there are people who take huge, I don't know, they get pleasure out of that.
Yeah, what this survey has termed psychological arousal.
Oh.
That's the, get the likes and someone's
also
interested.
Social media, if used socially, can facilitate a more active in real life social life. For example,
yes,
you
I
know,
agree.
There's going to be a massive jaw on Friday with Fuzzy Gish 13th by Satanic Dacha Orgy and Silver Black at Rumors in Crest to Johannesburg in order to celebrate my return to Johannesburg. And I wouldn't be able to tell all of my friends to come to that on Friday at 8 p.m.
Yep.
If it wasn't for being able to broadcast on social media. I'd have to phone hundreds and hundreds of people or plug it shamelessly on the radio, which you can't do. So
no, you'd never be able to get away with that. All right. Well, listen, we're out of time. We've got to get out of here and clear the way for the rest of the lineup on cliffcentral.com today. Thank you for coming to our party this morning between 6 and now, and we will see you tomorrow.
That's what
bright
it
and
is,
early.
Actually.
6 a.m.,
it's a
yeah.
Party.
It's a little get-together.
Good times.
It's a Google Hangout.
Ain't no party like a Cliff Central party.
Yeah, all right.
Sorry, I was just in the moment.
There was the finish line, there was the finish line, and then there was Sia. All right, let's just can that for now. Let's get on to the unnews. The Gupta emails continue to be leaked, and with it, more and more insights into the life of South Africa's first family. The latest seem to be bizarre material requests from the ANC Youth League. Yep, it's got so bad that there will soon be a Telefun quiz reboot on ANN7 where ANC Youth League members can play for household appliances and holidays while answering questions prepared by Belle Pottinger. Kim Kardashian says she has absolutely no respect or fondness for Caitlyn Jenner anymore. Speaking about her tranpa, Kim said that the things she said about Kris Jenner in Caitlyn's new memoir, Secrets of My Life, were unfair and totally acceptable. Also, Caitlyn left her penis at the house the other day and the dog nearly choked on it. And finally, Alistair Coetzee said things are going well in the Bok camp. The team is coming together. The weather's nice in Gauteng right now. And new coach tracksuits are very comfy. He also just received a new delivery of drawing boards. He ran out of them at the end of last season. With a fresh supply, he's looking forward to getting to them over the next 3 weeks. We'll be watching. Right. See you tomorrow. CliffCentral.com.